Sharam Charanirottamam Devim Sarasvatim Vyasam Tatojayam Udirayat. Before reciting the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is the very means of conquest, one should offer respectful obeisances unto the personality of Godhead Narayan, unto Nara Narayan Rishi, the supermost human being, unto Mother Sarasvati, the goddess of learning, and unto Shiva Vyasa Devyota. Nasta Prayeshu Bhadreshu Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya Bhagavati Tamashloke Bhakti Bhavati Nashtaki. By regular attendance in classes on the Bhagavatam and by rendering of service to the pure devotee, all that is troublesome to the heart is almost completely destroyed. And loving service unto the personality of God, and whose praise with transcendental songs is established as an irrevocable fact. A reading from the Bhagavatam, 15. Canto, Chapter 7, The Activities of King Bharata, Text Number 7. This is another one of those chants. I don't think we're going to chant it, because I don't know how. But I'll try. And that's not the whole thing written down anyway. Evam karma vishuddhaya. I don't know if you want to try it. You don't. And I might not be reading it the same way it's there, because here it's like a lot longer the lines. Vishuddha sattva syantar.
Vishuddha sattva syantar.
Vidyakasha sharire.
Vidyakasha sharire.
Brahmani Bhagavati.
Brahmani Bhagavati.
Vasudeve Mahapurusha.
Vasudeve Mahapurusha.
Rupo Palakshane Shrinvatsa.
Rupo Palakshane Shrinvatsa.
Kustubha Vana Malari.
Kustubha Vana Malari.
Dara Gata Dibir. Upalakshite Nija Purusha.
Upalakshite Nija Purusha.
Rilikitena Mani.
Rilikitena Mani.
Purusha Rupena.
Purusha Rupena.
Virochamana.
Virochamana.
Uchash. Saram
Shastaram
Bhaktir Anudinam
Bhaktir Anudinam
Etamana Raja Raja Raya Jayata
Etamana Raya Jayata.
Okay, we're going to just read the word for word. Evam.
Evam.
Thus.
Thus.
Karma Vishuddhaya.
Karma Vishuddhaya.
By offering everything for the service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
By offering everything for the service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
And not desiring any results of his pious activities.
And not desiring any results of his pious activities.
Vishuddha Sattvasya.
Vishuddha Sattvasya.
Of Bharat Maharaj.
Of Bharat Maharaj.
Whose existence was completely purified.
Whose existence was completely purified.
Antaridaya Akasha Sharire.
Antaridaya Akasha Sharire.
The Supersoul within the heart.
The Supersoul within the heart.
As meditated on by yogis.
As meditated on by yogis.
Brahmani.
Brahmani.
Into impersonal Brahman.
Into impersonal Brahman.
Which is worshipped by impersonalists.
Which is worshipped by impersonalists.
Yanis Bhagavati.
Ganesh Bhagavati.
Unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
Unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
Vasudeva.
Vasudeva.
The son of Vasudeva. Lord Krishna.
Lord Krishna.
Mahapurusha.
Mahapurusha.
Of the Supreme Person.
Of the Supreme Person.
Rupa.
Rupa.
Of the form.
Of the form.
Palak. Lakshane.
Upalakshane.
Having the symptoms.
Having the symptoms.
Srivatsa.
Srivatsa.
The mark on the chest of the Lord.
The mark on the chest of the Lord.
Kastuba.
Kastuba.
The Kastuba gem used by the Lord.
The Kastuba gem used by the Lord.
Vanamala.
Vanamala.
Flower garland.
Flower garland.
Aridara.
Aridara.
By the disc and conch shell.
By the disc and conch shell.
Gada Adibi.
Gada Adibi.
By the club and other symbols.
By the club and other symbols.
Upalakshite.
Upalakshite.
Being recognized.
Being recognized.
Nija Purusha Rit Likitena.
Nija Purusha Rit Likitena.
Which is situated in the heart of his own devotee.
Which is situated in the heart of his own devotee.
Like an engraved picture.
Like an engraved picture.
Atmani.
Atmani.
In his own mind.
In his own mind.
Purusha Rupena.
Purusha Rupena.
By his personal form.
By his personal form.
Virochamane.
Virochamane.
Shining.
Shining.
Uchchas. Uchchaishtaram.
Uchchaishtaram.
On a very high level.
On a very high level.
Bhakti.
Bhakti.
Devotional service.
Devotional service.
Anudinam.
Anudinam.
Day after day.
Day after day.
Edamana.
Edamana.
Increasing.
Increasing.
Raya.
Raya.
Possessing form.
Possessing form.
Ajayata.
Ajayata.
Appeared.
Appeared.
Do we have time for the rest of the class? Translation. In this way, being purified by ritualistic sacrifices, the heart of Maharaj Bharat was completely uncontaminated. His devotional service unto Vasudev, Lord Krishna, increased day after day. Lord Krishna, the son of Vasudev, is the original personality of Godhead, manifest as the Supersoul Paramatma, as well as the impersonal Brahman. Yogis meditate upon the localized Paramatma situated in the heart. Jnanis worship the impersonal Brahman as the Supreme Absolute Truth. And devotees worship Vasudev, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, whose transcendental body is described in the Shastras. His body is decorated with the Srivatsa, the Kastuba jewel, and a flower garland, and his hands hold a conch shell disc, club, and lotus flower. Devotees, like Narada, always think of him within their hearts. That was the verse, and now the purport. Lord Vasudev, or Sri Krishna, the son of Vasudev, is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So it's just nice. Prabhupada, you'd think he might get, you know, tired of saying this over and over again. But, of course, he never gets tired of saying it because he's glorifying Krishna. But, you know, we have to keep saying it to enforce it in our dull minds. And you'll notice, the more you read Prabhupada's books, that, you know, when you read them a second time and a third time, then you see, there's things, I never remember that. I think I would have remembered that, you know, something. So things that are very important to always emphasize, especially in the Vedas, three times, where Prabhupada emphasizes these things many, many times. People sometimes, devotees, criticize that Prabhupada, you know, he just taught us the basics, you know, how you're not this body and so many things. But if you want to go further, you have to hear from somebody else. This is, of course, not true. Prabhupada taught us everything. And if you follow Prabhupada's teachings, you can come to realize these things. Just like we chant Hare Krishna, we read these books, and the knowledge comes, but it's not theoretical knowledge. It doesn't come in exactly the same way like memorizing. You actually get realization. You can get realization by reading these books. And with that realization, you can understand everything. Not only that you're not this body, but who you are. Yeah, that you're a gopi, that you're a cowherd boy, that you're a blade of grass. Well, why am I a blade of grass? Of course, whatever you are, you're completely satisfied with that. Prabhupada gives the example of fruit. Mango is the king of fruit. But someone likes a banana better than a mango. That's their taste. So we like a certain particular rasa better. The gopis are the highest. So I remember asking Niranjana Swami, he said, because I kind of felt more like a coward boy, I just like to play and have fun, you know. And he said he wanted, you know, he likes to, you know, hope that he's a gopi, you know, or something. And I said, and I asked why. He said, because that's the highest, you know. Wants to do what's most pleasing to Krishna. He didn't say he was a gopi. I don't know what he is. I don't know what I am. I might be the gopi, he might be the coward boy. But following the process, these things would become revealed. You should actually come to know who you are, and then once you find out you're a parent of Krishna, then you start following in the footsteps of Nanda Maharaj or Mother Yashoda, and then once you're a gopi, you start following some of the servants of the gopis, and you just get trained up in that way. But we shouldn't artificially think this is pretty much material. Like I more thinking I'm a coward boy only because I can relate more to that with this particular body. It's hard for me to think I'm a little girl. But so just because of my conditioning, I might think a certain thing, but it doesn't necessarily in any way mean that's who I am. Although it could be, it's chances of 1 of 5 that I'm right, you know, because there's 5 primary rasas. But you can come to understand everything just by reading Prabhupada's books and who you are, and you can completely purify your life. And especially by following, this is the whole point, by following the instructions of the Guru, the bona fide representative of Krishna, that everything can be revealed to you. Everything, just by following those instructions, whatever they may be. Many times people would ask Srila Prabhupada, what can I do to please you? And he would almost, 99% of the time say, chant Hare Krishna. That's it. It's not so hard to please Prabhupada, but oh, can I do something else? I want to do something more personal. I would love to do something more personal too, but why should we have a desire of what we would like to do? That's more like karma yoga. Karma yoga is what I want to do, but I offer the results to Krishna. I mean, it's good, but bhakti is, it's whatever Krishna wants. I don't have any feeling. If he wants me to do something else that I don't want to do, then I accept that as nectar. If he wants me to do something that I don't like doing, I would accept it as nectar. If he wants me to not do something that I like doing, then I accept that as poison. So this is bhakti, is whatever Krishna wants, not what I want. Whereas karma is more, I like doing this and I'm going to do it, but I'm giving everything to Krishna from it. So that's more like karma yoga. So similarly, even with the spiritual master, we should do whatever he wants us to do, not what we would like to do for him. I would like to do this. I mean, I would like to do so many things for Srila Prabhupada. But the main things he wants me to do is chant Hare Krishna. So why does Srila Prabhupada want us to chant Hare Krishna? Any reason? Nobody knows. Okay, let's see if anybody else I know, you know. Okay. You know.
Purify our hearts.
Okay, well, how does it purify our hearts? How does it purify our hearts?
Chanting?
Yeah.
So
what?
This is a process.
Okay, nobody could say
that. Mantra, well, is Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, it's God Himself.
Right. That's, you're getting there. That's pretty close. It's almost, it's all correct. Everything you're saying is correct. There's just one more thing you can add to it. Anybody want to think of what? So we chant Hare Krishna because it's Krishna Himself. That's, and there's one other thing. What? Do you know?
Lord Chaitanya says that Krishna is the central point of all relationships.
Yes, but because does the central point of all relationships mean if I say it, I'll get purified?
It means that the relationship becomes authentic.
Anyway, it's true. But go ahead. See, it's not exactly what I'm looking for anyway. Maybe completely right, but what?
With the mantra, it's asking us to engage in devotional service.
Yeah, that's true. That's true too. You want to say something?
Krishna likes it.
That's good. Krishna likes it. Yeah, they were actually all good reasons. I was just going to add one more. We get purified because it is Krishna, just like you said, and Krishna is supremely pure. And if we associate with that which is pure, we become purified. So that's how we get purified, by associating with Krishna through His holy name. There's actually, Prabhupada explains it, there's two kind of purities. One is where you're pure and you're pure and you don't become contaminated. The other is that you're pure and anything that's contaminated that comes in contact with you becomes purified. And Prabhupada explains that Krishna has these both purities. He can't become contaminated, and anything that comes in contact with him becomes purified. And he gives the example of the sun. The sun is pure and it can clean up a dirty place, a place with stool and urine. The sun can clean that up, disinfect it, even from a long distance. So that's why we chant Hare Krishna. That's why Prabhupada asks us to chant Hare Krishna, because he wants to purify us. And associating with Krishna is certainly purifying. So Prabhupada gives us everything. Even though here he's saying again, Lord Vasudev, or Sri Krishna, the son of Vasudev, he said that so many times, is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He is manifest within the hearts of yogis in his Paramatma feature. And he is worshipped as impersonal Brahman by jnanis. The Paramatma feature is described in the Shastras as having four hands, holding disc, conch shell, lotus flower, and club, as confirmed in the Srimad Bhagavatam 2.2.8. Kechit svadehantar hridaya vakkashe pradesha matram purusham vasantam chaturbhujam kancha ratanga shankha gadadaram dharanaya smaranti. Paramatma is situated in the hearts of all living beings. He has four hands which hold four symbolic weapons. All devotees who think of the Paramatma within the heart worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead as the temple deity. They also understand the impersonal feature of the Lord and His bodily rays, the Brahman effulgence. So there's another verse in the Bhagavatam, Vedanti Tattva Vidas. Vedanti Tattva Vidas. I know that is Brahmeti Paramatmiti Bhagavaniti Shabdate, but there's more to left out of line. Vedanti Tattva Vidas. Say the first word. Yes, Jnana Vajrayam. Yeah, that's So the Supreme Absolute Truth is understood in three phases: Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan. So they're all the Absolute Truth. Brahman is the Absolute Truth. Paramatma is the Absolute Truth, and Bhagavan is the Absolute Truth. But there are differences between them, and one includes the others. Bhagavan includes Paramatma and Brahman. If you understand Bhagavan, you also understand Paramatma and Brahman. If you understand Paramatma, you also understand Brahman. And if you understand Brahman, you don't understand Paramatma or Bhagavan. And Prabhupada gives the example of money. If you have $100, automatically you have $10 and $1. If you have $1, you don't have $10, and you don't have $100. If you have $10, you have also $1. So if you have Bhagavan, $100, you also have Paramatma, the $10, and Brahman, $1. But they're all the absolute truth. So any of them are transcendental. It's not at all material. So if someone is actually on the Brahman platform, they're on a spiritual platform, but it's only one aspect of the spiritual platform. And devotees won't accept. Somebody was asking, I don't even know if it was here somewhere, about liberation. Why do we want to get liberated when the saints don't want to get liberated or something? So devotees generally, they'll accept liberation, but they won't accept Brahman liberation, merging into the effulgence of the Lord. They won't accept. There are five kinds of liberation. Living on the same planet, having the same opulence, having the same bodily features, merging into the effulgence, and one more. Anyway, anybody remember? Anyway, it's in the beginning of the Nectar Devotion. First, very, very first part of the Nectar Devotion. But it says that the other four liberations devotees may accept. I'll live on the same planet, I'll have the same opulence, I'll have the same bodily features, or some other one I can't remember. But merging, they won't accept it. Why? Because there's no way I can serve him. I won't serve. I was Jayadvaita Swami, right? He was asked the question. He was saying how it's not a geographical location. You're in the spiritual world. One of the things I remember hearing as a new devotee, asked the same question, very similar to Prabhupada, that Prahlad Maharaj and Lord Chaitanya, they didn't care if they took birth again. They just wanted to serve Krishna. So should we just want that, or should we want to go back to the spiritual world? And he said, you should want to go back to the spiritual world. You're not Prahlad Maharaj or Lord Chaitanya. So we can artificially say, artificially, because we don't really mean it, we really do would like to go back to the spiritual world, but we can maybe try to fool ourselves that we're very advanced and I don't care. I mean, ultimately, it's whatever Krishna wants. I have no choice, But if I had my choice, I would like to go back to Krishna Loka. That's as simple as that. And I think most honest people, some fanatic devotees might think that it doesn't matter as long as I'm serving Krishna. And some pure devotees doesn't matter as long as I'm serving Krishna. Why? Because they're already in the spiritual world. So if you're in the spiritual world, then it doesn't matter if I go to the spiritual world or I serve here. I'm already there. I don't think I'm there, but I'm completely satisfied. So those who are in the spiritual world, for them it doesn't matter if they go back or not. Because it's not, as I said, a geographical location, or as Maharaj also said. It's a state of being, of consciousness. So if I'm with Krishna all the time, I don't care if I go back or I'm here, or whatever it is, it doesn't matter. As long as I'm serving him, that's all. We get that taste. But those who aren't, we should want to go back. Why should we want to go back? Anybody have any? Just, it's not like a fixed answer. It's just like, why should you want to go back? Why?
Because with Krishna.
Yeah, you're with Krishna. Any other reason? Anybody know why they'd like to go back to the spiritual world? It's a personal thing. Do you have a reason, or you don't really have a reason? Just want to do it because other people are doing it.
Because it's our origin and natural state.
Yes. Our origin and natural state. So you want to go back to nature. It is your nature. That's really going back to nature, though. Most people, when they say go back to nature, it's more the woods and the country. But she wants to go all the way back to what our real nature is. I mean, in most cases, we want to be happy. And everybody there is happy. Nobody is unhappy in the spiritual world. You can't be unhappy in the spiritual world. So, I mean, that's me. I don't like it here. It's too many things that I don't like. In the spiritual world, those things aren't there. Like Jai Dvaita Swami said, I'll repeat it because I love it, on New Year's Eve. And now we're all here to usher in another miserable year in this material world.
Another year in service.
Yeah, you can see.
You're not
going
to see the misery of material world.
Yeah, well, I think he's being honest that most of us are not on that platform of seeing that now I have another year to serve Krishna. That's more of a pure devotee. Most of us, Prabhupada says, you should have a pessimistic view of material life, because then there's impetus for spiritual life. If you think life is nice, then why would you bother surrendering to Krishna? He says, Abrahma bhuvana loka punavartino juna mamopetya tukantiya punajanma navidyate. From the highest planet in the material world down to the lowest, all the places of misery wherein repeated birth and death take place. Krishna is certifying this is a miserable place. It is. Prabhupada said the same thing. And he says, make the best use of a bad bargain. You made a bad bargain, but at least make the best use of it. He said this material world is like a stool room. It's like a bathroom. That's what people come in. Why do you go to the bathroom, you know? This is the material world. It's not a nice place. So thinking positive, I had a friend who he thought we were too pessimistic, and he said, you got to think, always think positive about every situation, you know, whatever happens, you think of how good it is. And then one time, he was with his girlfriend in a boat on Lake Klamath, or Klamath Lake, but it's a really, really big lake. And they went out, and they got stuck, they couldn't see land anywhere, they had no idea how to get back. And they're in the middle of the lake, and they stayed out all night freezing. And he like took a blanket from his girlfriend to keep himself warm. He said, I don't think they were girlfriend and boyfriend after this one experience. but he came back and he told us how horrible and scary and all these things. And I said, why didn't you think positive? And he said, yeah, right. So it's not something you could just... I'll just think positive and everything will be wonderful. This is some nonsense idea. it's not going to change anything. You're going to suffer like anything. Eventually, you're going to realize it doesn't work, this thinking positive, doesn't change my life. But if you think of Krishna, it does. Even if you're suffering and you're thinking of Krishna, the suffering doesn't affect you as much if you really think. It's like when you like become more calcified. You're working really hard and physically, and you get cut and you're still working. You don't even know you're cut. You didn't feel. Normally, if you get a cut, you feel it. But when you're absorbed in something, you don't even feel it. And then you just see blood all over, and then, wow, I cut myself. I don't even know how it happened. That's something a lot of people have experienced because your mind is somewhere else. So similarly, if you're so fixed in Krishna, then when there's suffering, it doesn't affect you much. You don't feel it much. So it does minimize. And then if you're Krishna conscious, you're not disturbed by any material, so-called material disturbances. It's not that you don't feel cold. You feel cold. You may feel these things, but it doesn't affect you in the same way. And we have to become pure devotees to find out exactly how it does affect us. And you can come back and say, "Hey, I'm a pure devotee, and it still bothers me." And when bad things happen, I'm just talking to one devotee. She's saying how everything is. Krishna has done everything for her. She hasn't done anything. You know, it's all Krishna. I said, no, you desired. You had desires, and you got the results. I said, there are other people who, she gets some opportunity and she reacts in a certain way. There's other people who get that same opportunity and they react differently. And then she thought about some of her relatives. Yeah, that's true. But so she gives Krishna all the credit, but then she also blames Krishna when anything goes wrong. Of course, that's better than not having anything to do with Krishna. Prabhupada says, you can love Krishna or you can hate Krishna. As long as Krishna is there, you'll get purified. But it's certainly better to love Krishna. And even if something bad happens to us, the way a devotee is supposed to think, and it's actually factual, is that I deserve much worse than this. Krishna is just giving me a little suffering for all that I deserve. And you may think, I wasn't ever that bad, you know. But it's only one life. We have no idea what we've done in other lives. And if you want to finish all your karma from all your lives in this one life, you have to go through some suffering, and it's minimized. You're supposed to get so much suffering and you're just getting a little. Well, be happy. Stop complaining. Okay. So does anyone have any... Oh, did I finish? I think I finished the purport.
Yeah.
Yes.
Just a couple of thoughts. This world is like a public restroom, and you should come in, do your business, and get out.
Right, exactly. That's right. I don't know if you all heard of, but this material world, it's like a restroom or bathroom, and you should do your business and get out. You don't hang out talking to more people who come in the bathroom. Just get out. That's what you do.
So that's one aspect of reality. The other one is that some little confusing thing says if you are truly engrossed in devotional service, then Maya acts less powerfully.
Yes. If you're engaged, well, that's from the Bhagavad Gita that, this material world, it's threefold miseries, it's hard to... this material world consisting of threefold miseries is difficult to overcome, but those who have surrendered unto me can easily cross beyond it. So it's very difficult. It's impossible to do this on your own, but if you surrender to Krishna, you can easily cross over it. It's like an ocean, but it becomes as small as the water in a calf's hoof print, and then you can cross over it easy. And then it's anyways, not even a cow, but a calf, it's smaller, easy to cross over. So Krishna does that same thing with our karma. We got a huge amount, and he just makes it into practically nothing if we're surrendering to him. Just gives us some little reaction, just in case we start to think this is a nice place. You can't enjoy in the material world. There's no enjoyment. There's a relief of suffering. There's, people think there's enjoyment, but it's not really enjoyment. One of the things it says in Bhagavad Gita that without peace of mind, there's no question of happiness. So all these people who are enjoying all these things, they're not peaceful in their mind. They're just, you know, whatever it is they're getting into. It's not peace. Peace of mind is a prerequisite for enjoying. And if you ever experience, and you can with Krishna consciousness, peace of mind, and then you know, this is really nice. Most people, they might get afraid if they had peace of mind, because their mind is just all full of everything. It's like, well, what happened? But peace of mind has to be there in order for there to be happiness, and people don't have that. You had a comment or question?
Yes, to this verse.
Can you speak louder?
To this verse, Bhagavan has three aspects, Sat, Chit, Ananda. Then Brahman only Sat, and Paramatma only Sat, Chit. Therefore, if you go to Brahman aspect, you will be not happy. There's no enjoy, no relationship.
Yeah, Brahman is there's definitely no happiness, but there's a relief of distress. There's no distress. And that is a wonderful thing, to not have any distress. That's really nice. But it's not as much as actually having bliss. That's another thing. So it's just relief of distress. So there's Sat, Chit, Ananda. There's eternity. There's eternity in Brahman, and there's, I guess, knowledge in Paramatma realization. And then there's, of course, eternity, knowledge, and bliss in relationship with Bhagavan. Yeah, but they are all transcendental. Yes.
I have a question. It's about that being realistic about material life, that we should understand that there is no happiness. At the same time, sometimes we see that like we maybe think that we are well balanced in both spiritual and material life, and we can be satisfied with our material life and kind of happy. So is it illusion, or is it like really some kind of happiness?
I think that you can be satisfied with material life. You know, it's make the best use of a bad bargain. You're here and things ain't so bad. I got a relatively good situation. I'm not in Ethiopia starving to death or something. I got I got shelter, I have clothes, and I have food, and I can even get other things that I'd like, you know.
You may be satisfied with relationship and quite happy here.
Well, satisfied with relationship, you could be relatively satisfied. No one is completely happy in relationships here. No one is completely happy in relationships with their spouse, with their parents, with their children. There's always things, you know, things could be better. But relatively, in relation to this other person, I got it good. You know, so you could think that way. But in relationship to the spiritual world, I don't have it good.
So it can be both. A devotee can realize that there is no happiness in the material world and at the same time be satisfied with his material situation.
Yes. Yes. It's not when there's no happiness, you don't have to be, the less distressed you are, that's the closest you're going to come to happiness in this material world. So things aren't bad. Yes, you can be satisfied in the material world, not without Krishna consciousness. And if you are somewhat satisfied without Krishna consciousness, then you're in complete illusion. Even if you are completely satisfied, it doesn't last. You know, I'm completely satisfied for today. My wife is so wonderful. Everything is so great. And then the next day, it's not. Now, okay, so it goes on for 2 days. Goes on for 3 days. But there's going to be a point where it's not nice anymore. That always happens. Even if it's the end of your life or the end of their life, then you're without that person. How can I live? Whatever it is, it ends. It has a beginning and an end. You can't. That's a material world. I don't want my happiness to end. And there's no way you're going to have that in the material world. So even if you're satisfied, and in my opinion, people who are really satisfied, husbands and wives, and everything is wonderful in Krishna consciousness, they're not as good of devotee. They think that there's complete. I know one person who could go on living like this, didn't even care if he went back to the spiritual world because everything was so great in his relationship with his wife. He had a really good wife. He did. And then they got divorced. So it's to help him understand, you know, this is just an illusion. It doesn't last. You know, so he had, his wife was much more qualified than he was, materially, and probably spiritually too. And then she finally just, I don't know what happened, I wasn't really around during the, but I was around. He used to be at our temple, and he told us, or told me, or told another devotee, that he would like to just, you know, like live eternally like this. That's really an illusion. Because he had a, you know, so even if you're completely satisfied, you couldn't have a better relationship with your husband or your wife. Ideal. It doesn't last. You know, he may not feel the same way. Or she may not feel the same way.
Yes. You're saying that the concept that we need to keep in mind is that everything is ephemeral.
Yes.
And you can be satisfied, but within the context of constantly moving towards Krishna, Krishna consciousness.
Yeah, if you're into Krishna consciousness, yes, you can be. But without Krishna consciousness, it's constantly moving. Even if you're satisfied, then you're not going to be satisfied. If you're in Krishna consciousness, you're satisfied in Krishna consciousness, and then when things happen in the material world that you're not satisfied with, you have shelter at Krishna. So then you can deal with it. It's not so bad. It's, you know, most people's problems, they're all relative. Even your problem, what might be so bad for you, if you compared it with somebody in some other country starving in a war zone, so many horrible things, it's like, you know, if they had that, they'd be happy. You know, and we're thinking, I can't get this, this toy, I'm unhappy. You know, it's all relative. This is the relative world. But there is an absolute happiness. And that's what we want. What's the difference? I'm happier than you, so I feel good. I got more things than you. I have a better relationship. So as long as I look at everybody else who's in worse situation than I am, I feel pretty good. People look at people who have accidents, you know. Oh, wow, a big accident, you know. It wasn't me. I'm okay. So the material world is relative world, but this is relative happiness, relative distress. Somebody's suffering more than you, somebody's enjoying more than you, materially. That's it. But it doesn't matter. If I take shelter of Krishna, and everyone has that equal opportunity to take shelter of Krishna and enjoy real happiness, no matter what their external situation is. Like Amarish said in at Faneuil Hall, you know, because don't think that if you're born rich, you're going to be happy. You know, he was born with everything, his richest family practically, and he wasn't happy. Neither is his relatives happy. It doesn't make you happy. We think, I mean, one devotee jokingly said, yeah, easy for you to say. But we may think that if I had these things, I'd be happy. I might be happy, happier than I am now because I'm struggling for this. But it's not. It's all relative. It's all relative. And if it really, what I see, practically speaking, if having material opulence makes you happy, why do some people who have material opulence commit suicide? They're just as miserable. Doesn't matter. It's just foolish. We think that there's a bumper sticker I saw once. Whoever dies with the most toys wins. It's like, if I get all these things, I've succeeded. It's so stupid. I met a man on a bus in Boston when I used to be in Boston in the early 70s, distributing books, and it was an Indian man, and there was very few Indian people at that time in the early 72, 73 in Boston, or anywhere in this country. They just didn't allow him to come in very much. But I met an Indian man on the bus, and I approached him very nicely, trying to give him a book, and He said, I came here, he said something about like he was an orphan or something, and I worked really hard, I'm getting two stories mixed up. This guy or another guy, and he said that I decided I'm gonna die rich. That was his goal in life, and he's like succeeded or something. Wow, what a great goal! But you're gonna die. But anyway, with this one Indian man, he wasn't interested, and I was pretty nice. And he was saying how it's nice here, because he's successful and it's nice and wonderful, and he wants us. I said to him, okay, if you like it here, now, of course I was dressed as a brahmachari with a shaved head, and Indian people kind of, even though they may not be followed, they kind of respect that, or at least they think those people have some potencies. So anyway, I kind of cursed them. I said, if you like it here, then you can come back, birth after birth after birth. And then I walked away, and he got scared, apparently, I would think, because when I was leaving, I would pay when I was leaving. I don't know if they do that now, but they paid when I was leaving. So anyway, when I was leaving, he ran up and he paid for me to get out of the bus. So he thought about, he's saying how it's a great place. I want to, I like it here. And so you can come back, birth there. And then I guess he got scared that I have this potency maybe, and he's going to, I don't know what he thought, but I know he got scared. So even people who say how it's such a nice place, they're foolish. I was giving class in Hartford, and there was supposedly this Brahmin teacher in the class, and somebody told me this person's in the class. Anyway, and I quoted that verse, Abrahma Bhuvanaloka, from the highest planet's place of misery. And he was saying it's not a miserable place, it's not. It's certified by Krishna to be the guy. These people just, I think if they think that if they say it's nice, then it's nice. I don't know. They're just an illusion. But anyway, I tried to defeat him a little bit. Doesn't matter. The guy was such a rascal. So I didn't want to waste my whole class on this fool. So then another devotee talked to him, Geeta Mala, who is Indian, and she's a really good preacher. And she spoke to him afterwards. Anyway, so even the so-called Brahmins think this is a nice place. You get so many foolish people, or think positive and everything is wonderful. Ignorance is bliss. If you're in ignorance, it's really, everything is nice. Okay. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.